Do you want your middle school girl to grow into a strong, confident, and resilient young adult? So do I. The only thing is, middle school's hard for both kids and parents. Welcome to the Raising Middle School Girls podcast. I'm Janice Scholl, and I'm just a regular parent on a mission to uncover the best tips and advice for raising middle school girls. Hey there, parents. Today, I'm talking with Chelsea Gooden. Chelsea has recently written a book, Underestimated, The Wisdom and Power of Teenage Girls. I've had the opportunity to read, and I am so excited for this conversation. Chelsea is an academic tutor and mentor, but she does so much more for teen girls than just teach math and science. She regularly speaks to audiences about gender justice, and she conducts workshops and coaching for parents on how to better understand and connect with their daughters. Thank you so much for being here with us today, Chelsea.
Thank you. It's my joy and pleasure to be here. Thank you.
There's two things about your book that I really noticed first, and that is, number one, you were able to climb into the minds of teenage girls, and they really open up to you. And I want to talk to you about how you are able to draw the things out of the teens that us parents want to know, but we don't seem to have the right tools or we're not using the right language. The second thing I love about your book is that it's not just a why, it's a how-to. And you give us language, you give us the ability to really understand how to connect with our teens. So can we start just by talking about how did you get to know teens so well and how do you get them to open up to you?
Yeah, of course. Well, I often say, you know, I'm not here to be a parenting expert. It's more about me being like a microphone or portal for what teenage girls want to tell the world. And I'm just the right translator to adults to help them hear that. And it has so much to do with meeting the girl exactly where she's at, listening, and not giving any judgment or shame, and any type of tone that I bring to the table, and instead genuine, sincere curiosity about what her thoughts about the world are. And so that I create safety, like a psychological, emotional safety for her in a way that I love and accept her exactly the way she is. And she has nothing to prove to me. And I know that parents do love and accept their kid the way they are, but there's certain language, right, that can denote judgment and they don't even mean to. And it can be very subtle. And teenage girls sniff out judgment in about 2 seconds. And when that happens, the walls go up, they shut down, they close you out. So it's about creating that type of safety, that any thought they share with you is good.
Yeah. And one of the things that you talk about in the book is really coming to teenage girls with no agenda. And that really hit home for me because as a parent, it's honestly, if I'm being truthful about myself, it's pretty rare that I'm coming to a conversation with my daughter at this age without an agenda. And that agenda being like, hey, did you get this thing that you need to get done? Did you, you know, did you communicate with your teacher about this? Are you getting the things? It often feels a lot like a laundry list of a checklist that she needs to get done and making sure that she's heading in the right direction. It's not just a, what do you want to talk about? What are you bringing to the table? But we know that our girls have it in them.
And that's why the book is underestimated, right? Like we're actually underestimating how much they want to be a part of the conversation and respected to participate with you in those decisions of even practical things that need to get done. So, you know, big to address your how-to of the book, one of my biggest things that I say is phrase everything as a question in a way that respects her involvement in the process. So even if it's something that's like she needs to check in with a teacher or you feel like, you know, you're trying to make sure something gets done, it's like kind of going upstream a little bit and being like, hey, so what would feel good about how I follow up with you on teacher stuff? Like, do I check in and say, hey, do you like a reminder or do you like it this way? You know, and actually having her kind of decide what works for her in the way that you communicate, even just about practical stuff. And also by asking her, well, what do you think the solution is here? How would you like to handle it? empowers her to also just check internally and be like, wait, what does work for me? Like, what would be helpful? And just that process of her checking in, rather than kind of a girl often feels just like a misunderstood victim of just everyone else's agenda on them at all times.
You know, you talk a lot about that in your chapter on choice and the difference of when us parents approach our kids with you should or you need to do something versus what do you want the outcome to be? How do you get there? Is kind of my interpretation of the way that you phrase the questions. And can you talk a little bit about the way you found our teens react when we push our agenda on them, when we kind of give them the path?
Right. So whenever we try to advise and fix and push them toward a choice, they're not going to like it. That's when they shut you out. And if anything, they'll be more stubborn and, you know, swear an oath of loyalty to their bad choice, you know, type of thing. So the more that we can actually just keep it truly open, honestly, when I ask them, what do you think the solution is? Their ideas are often better than the one that I have inside my head at that time. And I'm continually like, oh, and then this is the beauty of it. When it's their choice, they want it to work out. They're more committed to making it work out because they're like, oh, my parent trusts me to handle this. Okay, well, let me show them like that my idea was a good idea. And so there's a lot of empowerment just even in that, giving them that idea. Also though, sometimes we do watch them not make the best choice, and there needs to be room for them to understand that if they make a mistake too, like even if it was their choice, then they can learn from it, right? If we project our idea and agenda on them and then it doesn't go well, then they're just going to slap blame on you and like, well, I didn't think it was a good idea anyway, right? Versus if their idea doesn't go well, they can own it and learn from it and be like, okay, well, you know, it's just the classic, like, pain is always our greatest teacher here. But that's really hard, like holding space for a girl to make a mistake or have discomfort or, you know, uncomfortable feelings. And that is a huge pressure I see on girls, that they're so stressed out because there is no room for them to make mistakes. Everyone is telling them what they should do and that they should be perfect at all times, likable at all times, people pleasing everyone at all times. And there's not enough of that gray zone space for them to learn and grow and figure it out for themselves.
Yeah. You know, when I talk to parenting experts, a lot of the discussion right now is about allowing our kids to fail. And you brought this piece to the table that, like, I hadn't considered, which is they have to know they have failed. If they make the choice, they are invested and then they will course correct. But if there's blame passed to us as a parent, then we're taking away the opportunity for the learning.
Yes.
Like, then it's just failure for failure's sake. We have to encourage them to own it from the beginning to the end so that they can see the resolution, so they can build the resolution out of that. Not, mom, I can't believe you made me do it this way.
Exactly. Yeah. So well said. And then also though, when the choice goes well, when she does do a right thing that might have been different than what you thought was right, that's where we have to kind of humbly just affirm her like crazy and be like, oh my gosh, your idea was better. Like, that was so smart. And those are really the magical moments where she like is like, oh, I do have smart thoughts. And it's just this process of her starting to trust herself, not just even a parent trust her, but trust that her own brain is smart and can think of good ideas.
Yeah. And I want to talk about perfectionism and people pleasing. Those are two chapters, really important chapters in your book. But you mentioned a phrase that I want to touch on first, which is holding space. Can you tell us what you mean by holding space?
Yeah. So that was in the very first chapter, feelings, right? So often teenage girls are dismissed as emotional and crazy and dramatic, and that does not feel good to them. They feel judged by that. And what we do is we come in and we try to advise, fix, or slap positivity and be like, no, it's fine. Think of it this way. Think of the bright side of it. And instead of holding space, which is quite literally just listening to what she has to say. And oftentimes it's when it is the darker, harder, more uncomfortable feelings. And then just reflecting it back and being like, yeah, that sucks. Yeah, that sounds frustrating. Yeah, that, I always try to use the word she used, you know, that's disappointing. That isn't great. I totally agree with you. You know, like, and actually agree that that it makes sense she would feel that way, rather than invalidating that she might be having a hard time. And when I do that, girls are, you can see the relief just wash over them. And they're usually just like, oh, no one understood how I was feeling. And that's all they needed. They don't need some big solution. You know, if I do have an idea to help them, I'll always ask. I'll be like, do you want my thoughts on this? And, you know, at that point, when they've already felt safe enough that you validated their feelings, then they're more open to that. Or I'll empower them and be like, okay, well, what do you think the best way forward is with this? You know, or do you want to just vent right now? You know, I'll offer them that option too. And again, it's phrasing everything as a question where she has more power in the dynamic to choose what feels good for her.
Yeah. And, you know, the reason it's important for her to choose is because she has the opportunity to learn. But there's a lot of our girls right now that I feel like are paralyzed by perfectionism. And you talk about this. And so it feels like we almost have to push our girls when they're in that position because they don't want to make the wrong choice. Can you talk to me about perfectionism and what the girls themselves are saying about it?
Oh, yeah. This to me is the biggest source of anxiety that I see. And that, you know, girls just, they get the messaging from everyone, not just parents, from society, that like a girl has to be perfect in order to achieve success or be liked in the world. And, you know, it could be in their looks, it could be in their academic achievement. And I often try to create so much space for and levity. I always keep everything fun and light, you know, and so if they have a quote unquote flaw that they do, like maybe their brain gets jumbled when they're trying to write an English essay, I help her see it in I reframe it in a fun way where she can own it. And it's not something that is part of her core identity that is flawed and bad about her. So girls will take mistakes and put it into their core identity. Whereas when I'm working with boys, I mean, no big deal, whatever. They made a mistake. It really doesn't absorb the same way. And so also, I like to permission a space that isn't perfect. So, you know, if they are struggling in a class, I'll be like, what if you just got a C in that class? What have you got a C on that essay? And here I am a tutor, right? Like, you know, everyone's always shocked that I'm saying something like that. And it's not even that I'm trying to like make girls mediocre. Like they just need the relief that they feel when it's like that their entire worth isn't tied to getting an A in a class. And so when I say, hey, what if you got a C in that? You have nothing to prove to me. I already think you're amazing. I know you're smart. And she looks at me and she'll get emotional. She thinks I said the most radical thing in the whole world. And then when she just knows that I'm going to like her and value her no matter what, that's when she relaxes and can actually think of ideas better. And I see her grades go up when that happens.
Because the pressure's off.
Yeah. And I know parents don't mean to put on pressure, right? Like I know we're not, I mean, I do see parents do it more intentionally, but it can be more subtle than we think.
I think that is actually one of the most important parts that I've learned recently about perfectionism is like they can sniff out the difference between us trying to use the right language to, you know, promote a growth mindset and to reduce perfectionism. They can detect that so quickly. They know the difference between that and when we genuinely are like, look, it's going to be okay. Whatever the outcome, it's going to be okay.
You're so 100% right. This is why I love teenage girls. They, and I have a whole chapter called Radical Honesty, and teenage girls are so adept at the truth. Like they know when someone is telling them the truth and when that's their truth in their heart, where you're just like, yeah, whatever happens, whatever outcome happens, and they can tell. You're right.
They're much more emotionally intelligent than we give them credit for. I think we take their big feelings as an indicator that they're kind of unvarnished and not sophisticated enough in their emotional intelligence, when in fact they actually are just learning how to model them. They really do understand them very well.
Yes, you said exactly what I'm trying to say. We're underestimating them, right? Yes. And I actually think all human beings actually have big feelings. And as adults, particularly women, we're taught to contain stuff, repress, because the world has not been particularly safe for us to emotionally express ourselves. We get judged, we get slapped into categories that are unfair. And so, you know, that's part of the book too, is how can we actually create a different world that invites women to take up space and express themselves authentically?
Yes. And the other side to that, the culture that we're really creating, you know, we have perfectionism on one side and then we have people pleasing on the other. And that's a question I have for you is like, what are we doing as a society that is specifically ingraining this in our teenage girls? We don't necessarily, I mean, there are plenty of challenges with teen boys, but we don't see this same problem with teen boys. And we don't see this with other age groups to the same extent. What's happening with the teens?
Yeah, you're so right. I don't see it with boys in the same way at all. What I'm seeing is it's also, and it carries into adulthood. So a lot of this is also just like healing our own inner teenage girl, like adult women who read the book feel that way. And it has a lot to do with putting other people's needs before your own. So when we're people pleasing, we're just taking care of everyone else, making sure everyone else is happy. So when a teenage girl says, it's fine, you know, the classic, it's fine. Right? And women do it too. It's fine. It's fine. We're telling the world, we have it handled. Don't worry. Like, you know, I just want to make sure you guys know I'm okay. Even though like, it's not fine. Right? Like I actually get in there and I find out what they're actually dealing with. And then I say, hey, that doesn't sound fine. And she's putting my needs, my comfort before hers. Cause she doesn't really want to share the dark, hard thing she's dealing with because she knows it's going to make me uncomfortable and I'm not going to maybe be able to handle it. And I'm going to try to fix it for her. And so instead, when I just sit with her and I'm like, hey, no, do you want to just sit in the pain of that with each other? No, you're not alone. She's like, wait, what? You know? And so this process of like her having needs that may be harder and that's okay, but also just checking in with your needs, right? Like the female martyrdom or even, you know, mothers are always helping everyone before themselves. And, you know, as a society, we don't support mothers very well, but also just, you know, how we've been socialized. And so what is that idea of like, if you're hosting a dinner party, you know, and you go, you make 10 different dishes because you just want everyone to be happy. What if you actually just checked with yourself and you're like, wait, what would make me happy? Like, okay, actually making 3 dishes is what I would make me happy in still doing hosting this dinner party. And the people who are unhappy with that are your real friends anyway, right? Like, why are we so obligated to make everyone so happy all the time?
Yeah, it is. I mean, it is in many of us. And I think a lot of us, the fatigue and burnout we feel is directly related to our decision to people please. And how do we break the cycle? How do we recognize that what we're passing on to our girls? How do we recognize when they're setting themselves aside, their needs aside for the benefit of others?
So it's such a good question. And it's such a simple response, actually. I'm always saying, ask her. Okay. And I'm going to give a story about it. So 15-year-old Marley in the book, she was an incredible volleyball player. She made the varsity team as a freshman, getting so affirmed. You know, we're always pushing girls towards that like one thing they're just so good at because they get so affirmed for it. And they're trying to make everyone happy that they're so good at something. Right. But I was noticing, and also her mom was a star volleyball player, you know, a lot coming from every angle. Right. But I noticed she was getting migraines. She was getting stomach aches. She was so stressed out by the volleyball schedule. And one day I decided to just ask, hey, wait, do you like playing volleyball? And she looked at me and was like, well, I like that I'm good at it. I'm like, sure. Yeah, you are good at it. But do you like playing it? It's that same idea of like checking with herself, like checking in and understanding what her need or want is. And she's like, well, I like bonding with my mom about it. And I'm like, oh my goodness. Like, are you playing volleyball to make your mom happy or make everyone else happy? And she looked at me wide-eyed and was like, no, and like completely saw it. And I asked her, I was like, what would bring you so much joy? Like, what do you do with your time that lights you up? And she said that she loved to draw fashion sketches in her notebook on the bus rides to the games. And I was like, amazing. Like, would you want to take a sewing class over the weekends to build out that fashion, you know, that passion you have? And she's like, oh my gosh, I would love that. And, you know, and so we end up talking to her mom and she ends up quitting the volleyball team. By the way, I was the first person who had ever asked her, do you like playing volleyball? And so when she switched over to fashion, she got so into that too and became excellent at it. Also, she was just as brilliant at it. And it's funny, fashion I find in particular, people love to dismiss as like a flighty interest of teenage girls. And the truth is, I now know girls that are in their late 20s that have incredible jobs in the fashion industry. There are plenty of jobs in the fashion industry. That is not just some basic interest. And so when these girls actually find what they love and care about, oh, you know, her migraines went away, her stomach aches went away. And it was just quite simply just checking in, giving her room to explore actually what lights her up.
Well, I think, you know, dismissing an interest in fashion is underestimating teen girls. And folks, billions of dollars in the fashion industry. Billions, right? Like, there's an opportunity for some people. Is everyone going to become a fashion designer? No, absolutely not. But having an interest in, most of us aren't going to become volleyball stars either, right? No. Like, we're not going to become pros.
No, she actually has a better chance, honestly, getting a job in fashion than volleyball. And you're funny. This is the first person you've pointed that out, because the truth is, the volleyball, you know, everyone thinks it's so good for a college resume and stuff, but girls don't usually, they're burnt out by the time they hit college. They don't want to play volleyball in college, and there's no future. And there's so many other aspects that make that so hard. But it's definitely a much more standard, well-known extracurricular activity to invest time in. But yeah, it's not about even being a fashion designer. I mean, the girls I know, I mean, heck, one does the photo shoots for this big fashion brand for their social media. Like, she designs the fashion shoots, like really cool stuff that actually you never would have realized there's a whole job there.
Yeah. And, you know, discounting the interests of the girls when we do that. And we all do that as parents. We don't intend to, but we're like hoping that our kid gets them into something that will help them.
Yeah.
We're hoping that they're going to get into something that can demonstrate how special they are and that they do get praised. But the reality is when we discount that, we're discounting their ability to know who they are. And going back to what you were talking about, it's taking away their ability to really trust themselves.
Yeah. Yeah. And it also comes in, I'm going to bring in the word authenticity. The more that they have room to explore their interests, both on both sides of it, you know, explore, but also even spend time doing things they're bad at, because why not? Like, maybe it brings them joy. Like, less of this kind of achievement productivity focus, and more of tapping in, like, what makes me happy? Who am I? What do I want to be in the world? You know, and then their clothing choices come into play there too. Again, we love to dismiss girls as like, oh, they just care so much about clothes. That is their expression of their identity and how they are exploring who they are in the world. And that needs care around it and room to breathe and grow in the ways that they want to explore. And when I find a girl, when she connects to authentically who she is and starts hearing that inner voice where she trusts herself, that is the place of empowerment. That's when she starts making good, healthy choices for herself. And as a parent, you don't have to worry so much about trying to tell her what the right choice is.
Yeah. And I know that there are some parents out there who are thinking, yeah, but you don't know my kid. My kid isn't making the right choices. And there's a story in the book that I would love for you to share about the girl who wouldn't wake up in time to make it to first period. You know, that's an example of like, no, my kid, I can't ask a bunch of curiosity questions. I just need my kid to go to school. They just need to get up. It really does feel like a you should moment. And that story is great. So could you share that with us?
Yeah. Well, again, I've gained a lot of trust at this point with girls to like enter these conversations where they know I'm not going to come at them with a you should. And then I come in with my techniques of phrase it like a question, let her decide how she's going to handle it. So I said to her, I was like, do you want to wake up in time? I just started with the most basic question. Right? I was like, do you want to go to your first period class? And she was like, well, yeah. I was like, do you want to do well in that class? Because you got to start at the basics here. Like, and if she says, no, I don't want to do well in school, I hate that class. I mean, there is a world where I allow room for that, you know, where I'm just like, okay. You know, like you have to earn trust where you let her kind of make some bad choices. But anyway, I was a little further along in trust there. So she knew where I was going. And I was like, okay, well, do you want to do well? And she's like, well, yeah, I guess I do. I was like, okay, well, how do you, you know, why aren't you waking up in time? Why aren't you? And she's just like, well, I don't know. My parents took my phone and that has my alarm on it. And I'm like, oh, that sucks. You know, again, I hold space. I'm like, I think it sucks when someone takes your phone away. And she's like, yeah. You know, she just feels heard, right? You have to slow it down a little bit. And a girl wants to feel heard. She wants to feel seen. She wants to feel understood. And if she feels those things, then she'll start respecting you, your curiosity or your questions, right? And so then I was like, okay, well, is there another way to wake up? And she's like, well, my mom could wake me up. And I was like, do you like that? And she's like, no, I hate it. And I'm like, yeah, I get it. Yeah, it probably starts a fight, right? And she's like, yeah, we just fight. And I'm like, okay, is there another way to wake up? You know, it's almost like where she starts like looking at me and kind of being like, I know where you're going with this. But she knows I'm not wrong because I'm putting all the choices in her, you know, her realm. And of course, you know, an alarm clock, finally she said it out loud. But then I learned, I said, well, why haven't you used an alarm clock? And again, just keep asking. And she's just like, well, I just hate how there's all the buttons. It confuses me, frustrates me. And I was like, great, you know what? Let's pull up the internet right now and you can pick out whatever alarm clock you want in the entire world, right? She's like, oh, okay. You know, she just hadn't been met where she was at. And now she uses that alarm clock every day. Her mom like couldn't believe that she was waking up. I mean, it sounds like that story sounds simple, but this was a girl that like puts up a fight. Like she digs her heels in. So, and I don't want to make it seem like it's all just easy and stuff, but hopefully that was helpful. Just kind of laying out what that conversation looks like.
I think it's helpful in it because it's something that whether it's, you know, getting up in time or it's getting ready at the end of the day, or, you know, taking a shower or whatever it is, there's some level of experience that families have had with that. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's just simple. You just need to get it done. But we don't dial back and say, okay, why aren't they? Why aren't they doing this? And why don't I let them tell me why they're not doing this versus me trying to figure it out?
Yeah, and assume, project. Yeah, we're always trying to slap our story onto a girl. Yeah, and you know, in other circumstances, I'll get in there with the whys, and it's like she's been staying up late. Turns out she's been staying up late doing homework. You know, there can be real layers to this to unpack in terms of her well-being. It's not her just being a sassy teenager who wants to be obstinate against her parents about waking up in the morning.
Yeah. Yeah. So you kind of talked about what it looks like when a girl feels that she can be authentic. Can you tell me what the relationship between mother and daughter looks like once we're able to build that trust and really build up their self-trust and their ability to make decisions for themselves?
Yeah. To me, it looks like a girl that feels like she can just be herself. And I know that's easier said than done, but it has a lot to do with the compliments chapter, which is a chapter people don't really see coming in this book. They're like, what? Compliments? That seems basic, right? But I give real techniques in that chapter on how to affirm her in a way that she's really going to hear it. Because again, what girls hear a lot is criticism. And we don't even mean it as criticism. It's often veiled as like teaching a girl, you know, or something, or what we think is best and we're trying to teach them. And they take it all as criticism. And so instead, how do we affirm in the right way? And lots of times when a girl's achieving well, we'll do more basic compliments like, you're amazing. Oh my gosh, girl power, you know, kind of that type of vibe. And what I've learned is to lean into what her uniqueness is. And I'm even going to say the word weird because it helps even trigger, I think, even more specificity, like what makes your kid weird? And affirm it. And I know everyone's always so worried about their kid being normal and like other kids. I haven't seen that go well. When a person is trying to be normal, they're following shoulds, what they should look like, how they should act. And when a kid feels like you think their weird self is cool, they light up. There's a whole difference. And so the way I affirm, again, it's about helping them feel seen, heard, understood, valued, celebrated. So it's increase your compliments to like three sentences or more, and that will push you into more specificity. You make them as specific as possible. Real like, you know, I know a girl that bounces back and forth between her parents' houses, and it's like, oh my gosh, the way that you remember to bring your shoes and homework over to your other parent's house, like your memory is incredible. Like you're so responsible in that way. Da-da, you know, just like really seeing the little stuff that she's doing. And she's like, it's almost relief when she hears that too, those types of compliments. And then, or if they're really, they have like one of my girls is really good with slang. She just like knows all the hip Gen Z slang. And I always affirm her for it. I'm like, oh my gosh, thanks for giving me all the cutting edge words. You know, da-da. And she's like, seems like has taken pride in it now in a fun way that she kind of owns it. And it's all playful and fun. It's not this heavy environment of shoulds. Instead, she feels celebrated for exactly who she is. So, and then also increase enthusiasm. That's another thing. So increase increase specificity, increase frequency. I know a lot of people think they're complimenting their kid a lot, but it needs to be specific compliments, increase the length of them, and then the enthusiasm behind them, and not forced enthusiasm. Actually try to source within your heart you caring about the same thing they care about. And that could also just be enthusiasm for their interests. Again, we brush off girls as their TV show is superficial or flighty. No, watch the same TV show and say it's awesome. You know, find what you like about it and tell her that you think that's cool. And then she'll start being like, oh, okay, there's a trust that builds.
This was like an aha for me. I get it now, because when we're complimenting them on the general stuff that is what we want all teens to do well on, or whatever, that's really like complimenting them on fitting in the box.
Yes.
And what you're saying is compliment them for being who they are.
Yes.
And I get it. Like it just hit me. Thank you so much. That was so good.
I got chills. I'm so happy about that. Yeah. Like so much of the book is like loving them exactly the way they are, which we think we're doing, but it's exactly what you just said. We're trying to put them in a box and nobody feels good in the box, actually.
Yeah. Yeah. And if we just notice, if we take the time to notice and then reflect that back to them that we've A, noticed and B, care and love it, that's going to head them in the right direction.
Yeah. Well, and then there's empowerment. They start stepping into that identity more and more, and they start connecting to who they are in that space. And then that's when, and then the other big trick, tip of that chapter compliments is people like you as much as they like themselves through your eyes. So if through your eyes, you are seeing this really special, unique girl that they want to be seen like that, they're going to like you more too, because they feel safe with you. They feel seen by you. And so it just builds on itself.
Oh, that's so amazing. There is so much goodness in your book. And I know people are going to be super excited to check it out. And can you tell us where they can find you and where they can find more about your book?
Yes, of course. Okay. So I think Instagram is probably the easiest way to follow what I'm up to. Just at Chelsea Gooden on Instagram, because I have a book tour for the month of March. So I would love to see anyone across the country at the different, you know, New York, LA, Denver, Seattle. And you can buy the book anywhere that you buy books, from Amazon to Barnes & Noble to your independent bookstore I always love. And it's also a really just great gift. Yes, it's great for anyone who has a daughter, but I'm also finding any woman that wants to just grapple with the wounds that we had during our teenage years that carried us into adulthood.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Chelsea. This has been so enlightening.
No, thanks for so deeply understanding the book. It really means a lot. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Raising Middle School Girls podcast. If you enjoyed this episode and want to hear more conversations with experts designed to help you support your middle school girl, please hit subscribe. You can also sign up for the newsletter at the link in the show notes to receive emails about tips and resources, upcoming events, and new podcast episodes, all designed to support you and your child.